Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're going to continue our expectations series tonight. Down to the last three here. I'm riding solo tonight. I'm going to talk a little bit about Jair Alexander and some about Tez Walker as well and expectations for those players coming up for the 2025 Ravens season. Let's start with Jair Alexander, who turned 28 in February. He's at a crossroads season, I think it's fair to say, after in three of the last four seasons missing a significant amount of time. And in fact, he played just 1,926 snaps of defense over the last four seasons. That's not a lot, under 500 snaps per year, obviously. The Ravens signed him for $4 million with incentives that could take that to $6 million, as I understand it. I assume they are largely playing time related. There may be other things like a Pro Bowl or something as well. But the good thing about Alexander is he's remained outstanding in coverage when he has been on the field. The guy he reminds me of a little bit is Jimmy Smith. Jimmy Smith obviously hung around for years. The Ravens really loved Jimmy Smith. The Harbaugh and his relationship was very good. He was good with whatever role, and he continued to hang around at an unusual price tag for hanging around, which is about $3 million a season, $3, $4 million. And you just, there aren't that many players who hang around at that level because you have to kind of perform well to keep re-earning your role. If you perform too well, you'll get a big contract, go somewhere else. If you don't perform well enough, you're usually out. It's not a stable level, as I would call it. So Alexander, been an outstanding coverage defender when he's been on the field for the last four seasons, even though he's missed pretty much half the time over that period. Career as an 84.4 opposition passer rating. That was 79.9 last year. Did have a slightly elevated yards per target number, 7.7. It's not terrible, but it's also not great. He was over 9 yards per target. 7.7 is his career figure. The 9 yards per target largely came from a disastrous opener against the Eagles. He had an interception in that game, by the way. But he really got beaten. Devonta Smith and A.J. Brown both got to him. A.J. Brown for a 67-yard play, Devonta Smith for a 25-yard play. All the plays he gave up over 18 yards were in that first game against the Eagles. It was a game on a Friday night after a Thursday opener, so kind of a weird new thing for the NFL. It wasn't a good night for Jair. Packers ended up losing that game to the Eagles in the opener. Now, the rest of the season, however, Alexander allowed just 94 yards on 18 targets. And it wasn't that long. It was six more games, but that's 5.2 yards per target. That's absolutely terrific. The other thing that Alexander has done extremely well his entire career is not get penalized. And after a year of watching Brandon Stevens and Marlon Humphrey had something like 15 penalties last year, but the Ravens could really appreciate someone in the secondary who plays with his feet more than he plays with his hands. So I think Alexander will give them some of that. Only 12 penalties in 4,614 career snaps. That's almost as low as one every 400, slightly more than one every 400. That's a very good ratio. So if you think of Humphrey, probably had about one every 60 or 65 last year, thereabouts. That obviously is a big difference. He's very limited as a run defender, not a great tackler. So I don't see him as a guy who has value in the slot. I think they'll play him exclusively on the outside when he is in. And there is some question about how they're going to handle his playing time this year. I think that's one of the big questions that the Ravens will answer. They'll start to show it probably in camp in terms of who's playing with the ones and who's playing with the twos. I may or may not be able to say anything about it. It depends on if it's on the record or not. It'll be interesting to see how they match him up in terms of being on the first unit, whether Awuzie or he sees more playing time. I don't see any real reason why Alexander would sit ahead of Awuzie, but I could see a reason why they might rotate the two players. And both of them have had some injury concerns, and it kind of would make a lot of sense to keep them, try and keep them both healthy, try and keep them both fresh and still having had experience this season. So definitely something I could see happening. But as I said, I don't think we'll see him anywhere but on the outside. So I don't think we'll see him at slot. I don't think he makes any sense at safety either. I know that's been said by some people, but I'm not buying it. He entered the league from Louisville before the 2018 season. In fact, he's in the same draft as Lamar Jackson. Obviously, they both came from Louisville. He was drafted 18th, Lamar 32nd. So this is a reunion of sorts and a really wonderful use of leverage. The Ravens have had a really good use of leverage offseason to get some quality players to come here and try and win a ring. Awuzie is in that group as well as a player who the Titans will pay his salary. He just pays a vet min offset for him, and he obviously is a tremendous bargain. In Alexander's case, cheap contract with a couple incentives that certainly looks like a very good price right now. And I think had the Ravens not lost our Darius Washington, I think they might be in a position to not have made a signing like Alexander. But multiple things have happened so far this offseason. First of all, obviously the injury to Washington was extremely serious in terms of being one of the most versatile defenders in the entire league who gets lost. But beyond that, the Ravens' other corners haven't really stood out to me in camp. Longer Beam or Kone, the sixth round picks, and certainly JAD is on the roster bubble right now. So we'll see if he even makes a team. If he does, which his chances were improved by the loss of Washington, he's still only a 1-year solution, which is no better than Alexander or Awuzie because he'll be a free agent after this year. So, I think that the Ravens correctly identified the need for an additional quality corner so they don't become thin, or it takes them a little longer, let's say, to become thin at the position. Seems like no matter how much depth the Ravens stack up there, they eventually become thin because there are a lot of injuries, certainly at corner. All right, so I would expect Alexander to win the primary outside corner role. Now, what I think that'll look like is that he'll play in nickel and dime packages on the outside, but in base packages, we'll see Wiggins and Humphrey on the outside with two safeties and four total defensive backs, obviously, because it's the base defense. What we may see or may not is some significant rotation with Awuzie, and I don't see that coming from any other corner other than Alexander. It could be, Marlon Humphrey could be working through some injuries or some soft tissue problems. And I guess that could happen to Wiggins too, of course, which means those guys could get on the field that way. But I think if you're talking about a group that's depth is still there, they're all healthy. I think Awuzie probably gets the junior share of snaps in an Alexander Awuzie relationship. So he'd be on the field in nickel and dime only. And if I had to guess, maybe a third or less of the snaps for Awuzie with 2/3 going to Alexander. So that's just how I would see it playing out. Let's talk about what a good season is for Jaire Alexander. And I'd say, health has to be the first condition you put on any season for Jaire. 60th percentile, I'd say he plays 10 plus games and 500 plus snaps. Now, the snaps seem kind of reasonable based on what he's played the last 4 years. It's been just slightly under 500 snaps. So having him play 500 plus snaps and being healthy for 10 games doesn't seem unreasonable. He might have a little trouble getting to 500 snaps in exactly 10 games. I think there might be some, if he shares the position with Awuzie, he might or might not make it in that period of time. So it might mean more than 10 games to get that snap total. I'd say he continues to post solid coverage metrics and keeps his penalties to one every 250 to 300 or less. So if he stays in that range, he'll have completely come through on the penalty expectations for the Ravens. I don't think they could be unhappy with that. Fills the Jimmy Smith expectations for a cornerback with injury issues. So what play you do get is at a high level, and then he's just missing for part of the year. And I think it's reasonable to expect that Alexander is not going to be able to play 16 games. you know, if I had to gamble on it, I'd probably say there's at least a 70% chance that he does not play 16 plus games. All right. And if all those things were to happen and he plays about 10 games, I think the Ravens are in the odd situation where they might retain him for another season and they would want to. So anyway, this would be another kind of a Jimmy Smith deal, and Jair Alexander plays well. He's still only 28 years old, which is, you know, something that, you know, he's a younger corner, at this, or he's not an older corner. Let's put it this way. Jimmy Smith was actually older than 28 by the time he was getting the Jimmy Smith contracts. So Jair Alexander might be around for another year if he were to post kind of normal Alexander numbers over the course of 10 games. I could see him sticking around for another season. A great season. I think he plays 16 plus games for only the third time in his career, and he plays 900 plus snaps, I'm going to say, including the playoffs. So the Ravens decide he's the guy. It means he's playing at a high level. Awuzie is no longer really a consideration to take playing time from him, or at least not in any kind of meaningful way. And he stays healthy more or less the whole year. I do consider that pretty much an 80th percentile outcome. I don't think to get the 900 plus snaps in particular and prove that he's the guy for the whole year, I think that would largely be an 80th percentile outcome, even though I said 70% chance that he plays less than 16 games. I think he demonstrates the ability to play either side if he's needed. Now, I don't know what the Ravens are planning this year. They have some options. They did not do so well with Stevens always lined up at right corner because it meant that the X receiver was the big space budget, of course, was always lined up, and that led to some, I think, fairly unfavorable matchups. Now, they have a couple of ways they can deal with that. They can move Wiggins to right corner and play him every snap there. That might well be the answer. That would keep Humphrey at left corner slash slot, and that means Alexander would be coming in at left corner. Wiggins says there's no difference left or right for him, but that's what any corner would say, that there's no difference left or right. I would be interested to see how that plays out. I think that if I had to guess, I think that's probably the most likely way they would do it. But the Alexander's history of not taking penalties might also lead him to be the guy the Ravens trust to be opposite the X receiver, you know. And if it's in the case of the bigger, more physical guys, Alexander's probably going to be a little bit less prone to be grabby or to get juked at the top of the stem. So I think his experience might really play well against some of the bigger receivers that line up at X. So I'd say beyond the snap totals, I think, and the demonstration, the ability to play other side, is coverage metrics include less than 7.5 yards per target, 7.5 or less, I'll say, and participation in at least four turnovers. I'm going to define that as follows. Interception, a pass defense leaded to interception, so it could tip a ball to a safety, for example, a forced fumble or a fumble recovery. So participation in four. He's had 19, I believe, in 76 career starts. So if he were to, you know, play 16 games, it's a very reasonable expectation that he would be involved in four turnovers. If he plays like that, I would expect him to be in the consideration for postseason honors. Doesn't mean all pro, doesn't necessarily even mean a Pro Bowl, but he's on the list of people that they might vote for if he manages to play 16 games. Be a lot like Marcus Peters coming to the Ravens and how he immediately became all pro in half a season, effectively two-thirds of a season, with the Ravens in that 2019 season. What else? Ravens consider re-signing him. But in this case, this is the catch 22, and it's a catch 22 with Jimmy Smith and Jair Alexander. If he has the kind of season I just described, he's off for greener pastures and a big contract. So the Ravens will have him only for 1 year, but they'll look into re-signing him. They'll find the cost to be prohibitive, and he'll earn the team a 2027 comp pick instead. And you hope it's a fourth round pick and not a fifth. I think that's the kind of hope you have. If you have an all pro season or a Pro Bowl season rather, and you get signed for, you know, 3 years, $42 to $48 million, then I think you've got a good chance. He'll still be young enough that'd be a possibility. So I think that'd be a nice bonus from this Alexander signing if he were to come through with a big year for the Ravens. All right. Well, that's it for him. I think I hope fairly reasonable expectations for Alexander in terms of those two levels, the 60th and 80th percentile. So let's move on and talk a little bit about Tez Walker. In a lot of ways, he had a lost rookie year, and there are some reasons for it we'll get to.
You ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything, from stress to sleepless nights, with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light, immediately asleep. The Epic Euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com. Find your perfect gummy and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
And there's probably some other reasons that I don't know that we won't get to. Okay. But he is still the same guy in a lot of ways he was coming out of school at 6'2", 193, still a fairly slender build of 436, kind of a track star, jumps involved in there with 40 and a half inch vertical and 11 foot, 2 inch broad. He's active for 11 games this last year. The big step up that Tez Walker made was to be a core special teams player for those 11 games. And once they got him on the field, they did not want to sit him down again. But it doesn't mean they got him opportunities at wide receiver. He was on the field for a decent number of total snaps, but they didn't really get him opportunities as a receiver much. I'm going to look that up, how much Tez Walker was on the field this last year. But let's see here. Tez Walker played 60 snaps on the field this last year of offense and a lot more of special teams. And yet the only regular season target he got was the home run ball they threw against the Giants over the top, where Harbaugh supposedly designed the play and kind of a straight nine route to the end zone with some other things happening underneath to distract the secondary. So nice to see that as a 21-yard touchdown in week 15. Otherwise, and I'm sorry, he had 57 snaps during the regular season. He actually had three more in the postseason for 60 total. Now, here's the thing that I still see as a problem with Walker, and it looks like something he's tried to work on looking at OTAs and you know the practices to date that they've had prior to camp, is he's really trying to work on comeback routes that can help him sell the deep ball. Now, I talk about this all the time on draft shows with wide receivers. You need complementary routes that you can run, and the most basic set of complementary routes is a stop and go or any kind of a delay move to go with a good hard comeback route. A lot of that is based on the size of the receiver. And the bigger you are, the harder it is to sell those kind of fakes because you have to do what's called sitting in the chair to come back or to decelerate. And it's not just the fact that you show this hip decline or that you can do it quickly necessarily, but you generally speaking, you have to give up your movement earlier. And the opposite of that are Javonte Wester and Zay Flowers, who are able to just put their foot in the ground and turn. And that's a function, generally speaking, of their weight. You hope that's not doing any damage to either player's knees in that case, but they don't have to sit in the chair the way these, 6'2" 200 guys or 6'2" 200 guys have to do it. And even the players like T. Higgins, who were very good with vertical routes and good at high pointing the football and whatnot, they still need that complementary comeback route in order to be effective deep. So Walker, a player who really needed to develop that this offseason, I think they probably gave that to him as offseason homework. And it's looked like from a little bit of OTAs that he's really tried to do that. Part of it is just learning something that you learn probably in about fifth or sixth grade when you're playing football, is just to come back for the football hard. If you leave your quarterback hanging out to dry, if you sit there and wait for the ball to come back, you really need to come back for the football. And in the NFL, the ball doesn't take as long to get there, but the defensive backs are also pretty damn good about undercutting routes. So you've got to be good at coming back for the football. And in his case, he just needs to be able to sell it. He was terrible at this at UNC. That was the weak part of his game, was he didn't really have any kind of hitch game to go with his vertical threadiness. So it's the element of his game that's missing. By the way, I think Walker is one of the potential real breakout stars for the Ravens if he gets that done. I mean, he's got the speed still to be a very effective vertical receiver if he has something else to go with that. So we might see that. And if he were to be effective doing that, it wouldn't even shock me if he were to take playing time away from, say, a DeAndre Hopkins. So that would be an upside kind of year for him would be if he were able to do some of that. By the way, if you're a Ravens fan, should be rooting for that. You don't have to root against Hopkins, but the Ravens have Devontae Walker for 3 more years. It makes much more sense for Tez Walker to have a big year than it does for DeAndre Hopkins. Does the Ravens more good in that sense? It's a lot to like in terms of the athlete, much to improve in terms of route running. It's not simply the hitch and the go and getting those paired up. There's other things about sticking his foot in the ground and giving away his movement that he's got to get better at, but he's got time. I don't really expect a huge jump up in targets this year. I think, the kind of number we're talking about is kind of like 10 to 30 targets. That might be a reasonable number for him. He could do better, but I'm thinking that's like the 60th percentile is what I would say. I'll get to that a little later. He's not going to compete with Bateman or Flowers directly for snaps. What may help him get snaps is that the Ravens running a fresh legs offense. So if their goal is to rotate receivers pretty much every snap, not worry too much about how much time they're taking in the huddle. They'll still get to the line of scrimmage fairly quickly, but getting the getting fresh legs in against tired defenders on a regular basis, that would be a case where Walker could get a lot more snaps. It's also a good way for a Tylan Wallace to get more snaps as well. So Wallace is a player that he may be fighting for snaps with. And one of the things he'll need to do if he wants to beat Wallace out of snaps is to become a good run blocker. So that's something that he ought to know. It ought to be high on his priority list. He's a good special teams player already. He can continue that. I wouldn't expect that'd be a problem. If you can become a really good run blocker, that would help in terms of having him on the field in some of these early down situations that would normally go to Wallace. So they certainly did the second half of this last year. A couple things. I think, opportunities will come on offense with special teams play. Harbaugh loves special teams play, obviously, and he will push for some plays to be in there, a package of plays for Walker, if Walker is giving high effort on special teams. So I think it's the easiest way into Harbaugh's good graces is for him to play well there. I would say also that he really needs, of all the players, he really needs to have a healthy camp and preseason. Really demonstrate what he can do, show how far he's come forward in terms of the comeback routes and other route running as well, but show what he can do in this preseason. It's going to be some or a significant portion of his live fire for the whole year. So if he loses the preseason due to a soft tissue injury, or he loses even a fair number of practices to some soft tissue problems, that'll hurt him more than it would hurt a lot of other players. If Bateman has a soft tissue injury of some sort, it's not going to matter. He's still going to be starting in the opener. If Walker does, he'll miss an important opportunity to compete. So let's talk about what a good season is. For him, I'd say he plays well in the preseason, carves out a role, gets about 10 to 30 snaps in 2025. I think he has to do enough as a run blocker to stay on the field and improve his route running as a complement to his deep threat ability. So all the things I've basically said before. His yak also, it'd be ideal if that improved to contribute to a yards per target of 7.5 or more. That's a pretty darn low target. I assume there's going to be some place where they try and feed him the ball. He's not going to have the high percentage of catching deep balls that he did last year when he went effectively 1-for-1, I guess, during the regular season. So I'd expect him to have a lower catch rate and maybe struggle a little bit to get a decent yards per target. So we'll see how that works out. But yak would certainly be a way to help that. Let's move on to what a great season is. I think he gets a trial by fire due to circumstance. Now, ideally, that would be his own fine play, but we all know it's more likely to be a matter of injury that gets him that opportunity. In particular, an injury to Bateman could give him some X opportunities, even if Hopkins takes over that role for most of the snaps. I think that Walker and Wallace will both see more playing time if Bateman were to be hurt. That might also be the case with Flowers, but honestly, if Flowers is hurt, I think it's more of an opportunity for Javonte Wester to get more snaps from how they would use him. So if with that trial by fire, I'd hope that he could take advantage of it with a season of 8.5 yards per target or better on at least 30 targets. And the last player who kind of met this standard and obviously had a really big year unexpectedly was Aguilar in 2023. Aguilar had a big year. He caught, I think, 35 out of 45 targets on the season. That's not out of the question for somebody like Walker. It's top 20%, certainly. And I'd start the top 20% even lower than 35 catches, certainly, but then 45 targets. But 8.5 yards per target, that would be possible if he were to have a top shelf season. I'd want him to develop timing and chemistry with Lamar in particular. Any kind of extended play action is something Walker should look to get better with Lamar. And it's very hard to do that when you're not practicing with the ones. So if most of his practice snaps come with Cooper Rush and not with Lamar Jackson, it makes it that much harder. And his preseason, hey, it ain't going to be with Lamar Jackson because Lamar Jackson's not going to be on the field. So, it's his opportunities to play with Lamar. He needs to make the most of them when he gets that. Hopefully his route running will force safety attention. I think that'll be on a fairly limited scale to start with. I think most safeties, when they play the Ravens, are going to be concerned about the tight ends and try to take away the middle of the field between level 2 and 3. If that's the case, then the Ravens need to exploit that. And Walker would be the kind of over-the-top threat who can make a safety pay for biting on that tight end route there. So if he is drawing some safety attention, he'll certainly create more space for other receivers. But in either case, I think coming out of a great season, he enters 2026 with a move up on the wide receiver totem pole. The least I would expect is that Hopkins would be here and gone after 25, and Walker would move up a slot. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean he's ahead of Wallace, who Wallace would have to also be re-signed for another year, but the Ravens are positioned to do that given the contract they've given Wallace. And I think it'd be one move up on the totem pole would be a reasonable first step for Walker. And he has the other background scenery necessary to be a decent receiver in 26 and 27 if he can take a step forward this year. So anyway, that's what I have for Tez Walker. Still hopeful that he'll be justify that fourth round draft pick. The Ravens invested in him. He was the 12th best wide receiver I thought in the entire draft, despite the limitations in terms of route running he had. And I'll just love to see him follow through on that and at least have a couple of good years with the Ravens over the next three. That's it for today. Thanks for listening, folks. An abbreviated episode, obviously. And want to mention a couple of things that we haven't hit in a while here. First of all, if you're watching this on YouTube, please like and subscribe. It helps the algorithm recommend this show to a lot of new people, and I appreciate that. If you're interested in an analytics project, hit me up, particularly if you have your own idea for an analytics project. I'd love to hear from you. We can do a short on it. And I'm always interested in helping people who want to do an analytics project of their own and advising them. I have no desire to take credit for your work, but I'd love for you to share it with my audience on the air when the time comes. But if you have that in mind, that would be great. Other folks out there, if you're looking to do something nice for the show, the best thing you can do, we don't ask for money on Patreon. So if you can write a 50-word, 5-star review on your favorite podcast platform, that's always appreciated. Thanks for joining me, and we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQBar plant protein bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQBars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQBar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQBar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQBar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQBar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply. Available in app only.